Now, see how much I love you. I'm even going to record a whole nother chapter from Goblet of Fire. See? See, I love you. But you don't love me. All that growing and stuff you do. Shame. No, I love you. Okay, you ready? We are on 31. Let's go. Not even gonna do a long intro. See if I can record this before I fall asleep. So if I sound all sleepy and kind of like, it's because I am. I'm tired. I will pass out after this, though. Chapter 31, The Third Task. Whew. It's the last and final task. Dumbledore reckons you know who's getting stronger again as well? Ron whispered. Everything Harry had seen in the Pensieve, nearly everything Dumbledore had told him and shown him afterward, he had now shared with Ron and Hermione, and of course with Sirius, to whom Harry had sent an owl the moment he had left Dumbledore's office. Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat up late in the common room once again that night, talking it all over until Harry's mind was reeling, until he understood what Dumbledore had meant about a head becoming so full of thoughts that it would have been a relief to siphon them off. Ron stared into the common room fire. Harry thought he saw Ron shiver slightly, even though the evening was warm. "And he trusts Snape?" Ron said. "He really trusts Snape, even though he knows he was a Death Eater." "Yes," said Harry. Hermione had not spoken for 10 minutes. She was sitting with her forehead in her hands, staring at her knees. Harry thought she, too, looked as though she could have done with a Pensieve. "Rita Skeeter," she muttered finally. "How can you be worrying about her now?" said Ron in utter disbelief. "I'm not worrying about her," Hermione said to her knees. "I'm just thinking, remembering what she said to me in the Three Broomsticks. I know things that Ludo Bagman that would make your hair curl. This is what she meant, isn't it? She reported his trial. She knew he'd passed information to the Death Eaters. And Winky, too. Remember? Ludo Bagman's a bad wizard." "Mr. Crouch would have been furious," he got off. "He would have talked about it at home." "Yeah, but Bagman didn't pass information on purpose, did he?" Hermione shrugged. "And Fudge reckons Madame Maxine attacked Crouch," Ron said, turning back to Harry. "Yeah," said Harry. "But he's only saying that because Crouch disappeared near the Beauxbatons carriage." "We never thought of her, did we?" said Ron slowly. "Mind you, she's definitely got giant blood, and she doesn't want to admit it." "Of course she doesn't want to admit it," said Harry sharply, looking up. "Look at what happened to Hagrid when Rita found out about his mother. Look at Fudge, jumping to conclusions about her, just because she's part giant." "Who needs that sort of prejudice? I'd probably say I had big bones, too, if I knew that's what it would get me for telling the truth." Hermione looked at her watch. "Oh, we haven't done any practicing," she said, looking shocked. "We were going to do the impediment curse. We'll have to really get down to it tomorrow. Come on, Harry. You need to get some sleep." Sorry. Nah. Harry and Ron went slowly upstairs to their dormitory. As Harry pulled on his pajamas, he looked over at Neville's bed. True to his word to Dumbledore, he had not told Ron and Hermione about Neville's parents. As Harry took off his glasses and climbed into his four-poster, he imagined how it must feel to have parents still living but unable to recognize you. He often got sympathy from strangers for being an orphan, but as he listened to Neville's snores, he thought that Neville deserved it more than he did. Lying in the darkness, Harry felt a rush of anger and hate toward the people who had tortured Mr. and Mrs. Longbottom. He remembered the jeers of the crowd as Crouch's son and his companions had been dragged from the court by the Dementors. He understood how they felt. Then he remembered the milk-white face of the screaming boy and realized with a jolt that he had died a year later. It was Voldemort, Harry thought, staring up at the canopy of his bed in the darkness. It all came back to Voldemort. He was the one who had torn these families apart, who had ruined all those lives. Ron and Hermione were supposed to be studying for their exams, which would finish on the day of the third task, but they were putting most of their efforts into helping Harry prepare. "Don't worry about it," Hermione said shortly when Harry pointed this out to them and said he didn't mind practicing on his own for a while. "At least we'll get top marks in defense against the dark arts. We'd never have found out about all of these hexes in class." "Good training for when we're all Aurors," said Ron excitedly, attempting the impediment curse on a wasp that had buzzed into the room and making it stop dead in midair. The mood in the castle as they entered June had become excited and tense again. Everyone was looking forward to the third task, which would take place a week before the end of term. Harry was practicing hexes at every available moment. He felt more confident about this task than either of the others. Difficult and dangerous, though it would undoubtedly be, Moody was right. Harry had managed to find his way past monstrous creatures and enchanted barriers before now. And this time, he had some notice, some chance to prepare himself for what lay ahead. Tired of walking in on Harry, Hermione, and Ron all over the school, Professor McGonagall had given them permission to use the empty Transfiguration classroom at lunchtimes. Harry had soon mastered the impediment curse, a spell to slow down and obstruct attackers, the reductor curse, which would enable him to blast solid objects out of his way, and the four-point spell, a useful discovery of Hermione's that would make his wand point due north, therefore enabling him to check whether he was going in the right direction in the maze. He was still having trouble with the shield charm, though. This was supposed to cast a temporary invisible wall around himself that deflected minor curses. Hermione managed to shatter it with a well-placed jelly legs jinx. See? That alliteration. She likes tongue twisters. And Harry wobbled around the room for 10 minutes afterward before she had looked up the counter jinx. That's funny. Oh, want to hear something else funny? So when Brits say jelly, they mean jello, like a gelatin. They don't mean like jelly like you put on your toast. That jelly they call jam. Yeah, it's really weird. They call all of it jam, even if it's not actually jam. Because we have jam and jelly and preserves. But their jelly is like our jello. So, yeah. You guys are strange. "You're still doing really well, though," Hermione said encouragingly, looking down her list and crossing off all the spells they had already learned. "Some of these are bound to come in handy." "Come and look at this," said Ron, who was standing by the window. He was staring down onto the grounds. "What's Malfoy doing?" Harry and Hermione went to see. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle were standing in the shadows of a tree below. Crabbe and Goyle seemed to be keeping a lookout. Both were smirking. Malfoy was holding his hand up to his mouth and speaking into it. "He looks like he's using a walkie-talkie," said Harry curiously. "He can't be," said Hermione. "I've told you those sorts of things don't work around Hogwarts. Come on, Harry," she added briskly, turning away from the window and moving back to the middle of the room. "Let's try the shield charm again." Sirius was sending daily owls now. Like Hermione, he seemed to want to concentrate on getting Harry through the last task before they concentrated themselves with anything else. He reminded Harry in every letter that whatever might be going on outside the walls of Hogwarts was not Harry's responsibility, nor was it within his power to influence it. This is the letter. Sorry, there's dust on them. There's dust on my filter cover for my microphone. "If Voldemort is really getting stronger again," he wrote, "my priority is to ensure your safety. He cannot hope to lay hands on you while you are under Dumbledore's protection, but all the same, take no risks. Concentrate on getting through that maze safely, and then we can turn our attention to other matters." Harry's nerves mounted as June the 24th drew closer, but they were not as bad as those he had felt before the first and second tasks. For one thing, he was confident that this time he had done everything in his power to prepare for the task. For another, this was the final hurdle, and however well or badly he did, the tournament would at last be over, which would be an enormous relief. Breakfast was a very noisy affair at the Gryffindor table on the morning of the third task. The post owls appeared, bringing Harry a good luck card from Sirius. It was only a piece of parchment folded over and bearing a muddy paw print on its front, but Harry appreciated it all the same. A screech owl arrived for Hermione, carrying her morning copy of the Daily Prophet as usual. She unfolded the paper, glanced at the front page, and spat out a mouthful of pumpkin juice all over it. "What?" said Harry and Ron together, staring at her. "Nothing," said Hermione quickly, trying to shove the paper out of sight. But Ron grabbed it. He stared at the headline and said, "No way, not today, that old cow." "What?" said Harry. "Rita Skeeter again?" "No," said Ron, and just like Hermione, he attempted to push the paper out of sight. "It's about me, isn't it?" said Harry. "No," said Ron in an entirely unconvincing tone. But before Harry could demand to see the paper, Draco Malfoy shouted across the great hall from the Slytherin table. "Hey, Potter! Potter! How's your head? You feeling all right? Sure you're not gonna go berserk on us?" Malfoy was holding a copy of the Daily Prophet, too. Slytherins up and down the table were sniggering, twisting in their seats to see Harry's reaction. "Let me see it," said Harry to Ron. "Give it here." Very reluctantly, Ron handed over the newspaper. Harry turned it over and found himself staring at his own picture beneath the banner headline, "Harry Potter Disturbed and Dangerous." The lies, Rita, the lies. "The boy who defeated he who must not be named is unstable and possibly dangerous," writes Rita Skeeter, special correspondent. Alarming evidence has recently come to light about Harry Potter's strange behavior, which casts doubt upon his suitability to compete in a demanding competition like the Triwizard Tournament, or even to attend Hogwarts School. Potter, the Daily Prophet can exclusively reveal, regularly collapses at school and is often heard to complain of pain in the scar on his forehead, relic of the course with which you know who attempted to kill him. On Monday last, midway through a divination lesson, your Daily Prophet reporter witnessed Potter storming from the class, claiming that his scar was hurting too badly to continue studying. It is possible, say top experts at St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries, that Potter's brain was affected by the attack inflicted upon him by you-know-who, and that his insistence that the scar is still hurting is an expression of his deep-seated confusion. He might even be pretending, said one of the specialists. This could be a plea for attention. The Daily Prophet, however, has unearthed worrying facts about Harry Potter that Albus Dumbledore, headmaster of Hogwarts, has carefully concealed from the wizarding public. Potter can speak parcel tongue, reveals Draco Malfoy, a Hogwarts fourth year. There were a lot of attacks on students a couple of years ago, and most people thought Potter was behind them after they saw him lose his temper at a dueling club and set a snake on another boy. It was all hushed up, though, but he's made friends with werewolves and giants, too. We think he'd do anything for a bit of power. Parcel tongue, the ability to converse with snakes, has long been considered a dark art. Indeed, the most famous parcel mouth of our times is none other than you-know-who himself. A member of the Dark Force Defense League, who wished to remain unnamed, stated that he would regard any wizard who could speak parcel tongue as, quote, worthy of investigation. Personally, I would be highly suspicious of anybody who could converse with snakes, as serpents are often used in the worst kinds of dark magic and are historically associated with evildoers, end quote. Similarly, quote, anyone who seeks out the company of such vicious creatures as werewolves and giants would appear to have a fondness for violence, end quote. Albus Dumbledore should surely consider whether a boy such as this should be allowed to compete in the Triwizard Tournament. Some fear that Potter might resort to the dark arts in his desperation to win the tournament, the third task of which takes place this evening. "Gone off me a bit, hasn't she?" said Harry, lightly folding up the paper. Over at the Slytherin table, Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle were laughing at him, tapping their heads with their fingers, pulling grotesquely mad faces, and waggling their tongues like snakes. "How does she know your scar hurt in divination?" Ron said. "There's no way she was there. There's no way she could have heard." "The window was open," said Harry. "I opened it to breathe." "You are at the top of the North Tower," Hermione said. "Your voice couldn't have carried all the way down to the grounds." "Well, you're the one who's supposed to be researching magical methods of bugging," said Harry. "You tell me how she did it." "I've been trying," said Hermione, but... An odd, dreamy expression suddenly came over Hermione's face. She slowly raised a hand and ran her fingers through her hair. "Are you all right?" said Ron, frowning at her. "Yes," said Hermione breathlessly. She ran her fingers through her hair again, and then she held her hand up to her mouth as though she were speaking into an invisible walkie-talkie. Harry and Ron stared at each other. "I have an idea," Hermione said, gazing into space. "I think I know, because then no one would be able to see, even Moody. And she'd have been able to get onto the window ledge, but she's not allowed. She's definitely not allowed. I think we've just got her. Just give me 2 seconds in the library, just to make sure." With that, Hermione seized her school bag and dashed out of the Great Hall. "Oi!" Ron called after her. "We've got our History of Magic exam in 10 minutes. Blimey," he said, turning back to Harry. "She must really hate that Skeeter woman to risk missing the start of an exam. What are you going to do in Ben's class? Read again?" Exempt from the end of term tests, as a Triwizard champion, Harry had been sitting in the back of every exam class so far, looking up fresh hexes for the third task. "Suppose so," Harry said to Ron. But just then, Professor McGonagall came walking alongside the Gryffindor table toward him. "Potter, the champions are congregating in the chamber off the hall after breakfast," she said. "But the task's not till tonight," said Harry, accidentally spilling scrambled eggs down his front, afraid that he had mistaken the time. "I'm aware of that, Potter," she said. "The champions' families are invited to watch the final task, you know. This is simply a chance for you to greet them." She moved away. Harry gaped at her. "She doesn't expect the Dursleys to turn up, does she?" he asked Ron blankly. "Dunno," said Ron. "Harry, I'd better hurry. I'm going to be late for Ben's. See you later." Harry finished his breakfast in the emptying Great Hall. He saw Fleur Delacour get up from the Ravenclaw table and join Cedric as he crossed to the side chamber and entered. Crumb slouched off to join them shortly afterward. Harry stayed where he was. He really didn't want to go into the chamber. He had no family. No family that would turn up to see him risk his life, anyway. But just as he was getting up, thinking that he might as well go to the library and do a spot more hex research, the door of the side chamber opened and Cedric stuck his head out. "Harry, come on! They're waiting for you!" Utterly perplexed, Harry got up. The Dursleys couldn't possibly be here, could they? He walked across the hall and opened the door into the chamber. Cedric and his parents were just inside the door. Victor Crumb was over in the corner conversing with his dark-haired mother and father in rapid Bulgarian. He had inherited his father's hooked nose. On the other side of the room, Flora was jabbering away in French to her mother. Flora's little sister, Gabrielle, was holding her mother's hand. She waved at Harry, who waved back, grinning. Then he saw Mrs. Weasley and Bill standing in front of the fireplace, beaming at him. "Surprise!" Mrs. Weasley said excitedly as he smiled broadly and walked over to them. "Thought we'd come and watch you, Harry." She bent down and kissed him on the cheek. "You all right?" said Bill, grinning at Harry and shaking his hand. "Charlie wanted to come, but he couldn't get the time off. He said you were incredible against the Horntail." Fleur Delacour, Harry noticed, was eyeing Bill with great interest over her mother's shoulder. Harry could tell she had no objection whatsoever to long hair or earrings with fangs on them. Uh-oh. "This is really nice of you," Harry muttered to Mrs. Weasley. I thought for a moment the Dursleys. "Hmm," said Mrs. Weasley, pursing her lips. She had always refrained from criticizing the Dursleys in front of Harry, but her eyes flashed every time they were mentioned. "It's great being back here," said Bill, looking around the chamber. Violet, the fat lady's friend, winked at him from her frame. Bill must be very dashing. Haven't seen this place for ages. Is that picture of the Mad Knight still around? Sir Cadogan? Oh, yeah, said Harry, who had met Sir Cadogan the previous year. And the fat lady? Said Bill. She was here in my time, said Mrs. Weasley. She gave me such a telling off one night when I got back to the dormitory at 4 in the morning. What were you doing out of your dormitory at 4 in the morning? Said Bill, surveying his mother with amazement. Mrs. Weasley grinned, her eyes twinkling. Your father and I had been for a nighttime stroll, she said. He got caught by Apollon Pringle. He was the caretaker in those days. Your father still got the marks. Fancy giving us a tour, Harry, said Bill. Yeah, okay, said Harry, and they made their way back toward the door into the great hall. As they passed Amos Diggory, he looked around. There you are you? He said, looking Harry up and down. Bet you're not feeling quite as full of yourself now. Cedric's caught up with you in points, are you? What? Said Harry. Ignore him, said Cedric in a low voice to Harry, frowning after his father. He's been very angry ever since Rita Skeeter's article about the Triwizard Tournament. You know, when she made out you were the only Hogwarts champion. Didn't bother to correct her, though, did he? Said Amos Diggory, loud enough for Harry to hear, as he started to walk out of the door with Mrs. Weasley and Bill. Still, you'll show him, said. Beaten him once before, haven't you? Rita Skeeter goes out of her way to cause trouble, Amos, Mrs. Weasley said angrily. I would have thought you'd know that, working at the ministry. Mr. Diggory looked as though he was going to say something angry, but his wife laid a hand on his arm and he merely shrugged and turned away. Harry had a very enjoyable morning walking over the sunny grounds with Bill and Mrs. Weasley, showing them the Beauxbatons carriage and the Durmstrang ship. Mrs. Weasley was intrigued by the Whomping Willow, which had been planted after she had left school, and reminisced at length about the gamekeeper before Hagrid, a man called Og. How's Percy? Harry asked as they walked around the greenhouses. Not good, said Bill. He's very upset, said Mrs. Weasley, lowering her voice and glancing around. The ministry wants to keep Mr. Crouch's disappearance quiet, but Percy's been hauled in for questioning about the instructions Mr. Crouch had been sending in. They seem to think there's a chance they weren't genuinely written by him. Percy's been under a lot of strain. They're not letting him fill in for Mr. Crouch as the fifth judge tonight. Cornelius Fudge is going to be doing it. They returned to the castle for lunch. Mom, Bill, said Ron, looking stunned as he joined the Gryffindor table. What are you doing here? Come to watch Harry in the last task, said Mrs. Weasley brightly. I must say, it makes for a lovely change not having to cook. How was your exam? Okay, said Ron. Couldn't remember all the goblin rebels' name. So I invented a few. It's all right, he said, helping himself to a Cornish pasty, while Mrs. Weasley looked stern. They're all called stuff like Bodrod the Bearded or Urg the Unclean. It wasn't hard. Fred, George, and Ginny came to sit next to them too, and Harry was having such a good time he felt as though he were back at the Burrow. He had forgotten to worry about the evening's task, and not until Hermione turned up. I just lost my place. Just that fast. Until Hermione turned up halfway through lunch, did he remember that she had had a brainwave about Rita Skeeter. Are you going to tell us? Hermione shook her head warningly and glanced at Mrs. Weasley. Hold on, I gotta move my mic. Hope that I didn't make too much noise. Hermione shook her head warningly and glanced at Mrs. Weasley. "Hello, Hermione," said Mrs. Weasley, much more stiffly than usual. "Hello," said Hermione, her smile faltering at the cold expression on Mrs. Weasley's face. "Oh," Harry looked between them and then said, "Mrs. Weasley, you didn't believe that rubbish Rita Skeeter wrote in Witch Weekly, did you? Because Hermione's not my girlfriend." "Oh," said Mrs. Weasley. "No, of course I didn't." But she became considerably warmer toward Hermione after that. Harry, Bill, and Mrs. Weasley whiled away the afternoon with a long walk around the castle and then returned to the Great Hall for the evening feast. Ludo Bagman and Cornelius Fudge had joined the staff table now. Bagman looked quite cheerful, but Cornelius Fudge, who was sitting next to Madame Maxine, looked stern and was not talking. Madame Maxine was concentrating on her plate, and Harry thought her eyes looked red. Hagrid kept glancing along the table at her. There were more courses than usual, but Harry, who was starting to feel really nervous now, didn't eat much. As the enchanted ceiling overhead began to fade from blue to a dusky purple, Dumbledore rose to his feet at the staff table, and silence fell. "Ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes' time, I will be asking you to make your way down to the Quidditch field for the third and final task of the Triwizard Tournament. Will the champions please follow Mr. Bagman down to the stadium now?" Harry got up. The Gryffindors all along the table were applauding him. The Weasleys and Hermione all wished him good luck, and he headed out of the Great Hall with Cedric, Fleur, and Victor. "Feeling all right, Harry?" Bagman asked as they went down the stone steps onto the grounds. "Confident?" "I'm okay," said Harry. It was sort of true. He was nervous, but he kept running over all the hexes and spells that he had been practicing in his mind as they walked, and the knowledge that he could remember them all made him feel better. They walked onto the Quidditch field, which was now completely unrecognizable. The 20-foot-high hedge ran all the way around the edge of it. There was a gap right in front of them, the entrance to the vast maze. The passage beyond it looked dark and creepy. 5 minutes later, the stands began to fill and the air was full of excited voices and the rumbling of feet as the hundreds of students filed into their seats. The sky was a deep clear blue now, and the first stars were starting to appear. Hagrid, Professor Moody, Professor McGonagall, and Professor Flitwick came walking into the stadium and approached Bagman and the champions. They were wearing large, red, luminous stars on their hats, all except Hagrid, who had his on the back of his moleskin vest. "We are going to be patrolling the outside of the maze," said Professor McGonagall to the champions. "If you get into difficulty and wish to be rescued, send red sparks into the air and one of us will come and get you. Do you understand?" The champions nodded. "Off you go then," said Bagman brightly to the four patrollers. "Good luck, Harry," Hagrid whispered. And the four of them walked away in different directions to station themselves around the maze. Bagman now pointed his wand to his throat, muttered "Sonormus," and his magically magnified voice echoed into the stands. "Ladies and gentlemen, the third and final task of the Triwizard Tournament is about to begin. Let me remind you how the points currently stand. Tied in first place with 85 points each, Mr. Cedric Diggory and Mr. Harry Potter, both of Hogwarts School." The cheers and applause sent birds from the Forbidden Forest fluttering into the darkening sky. In second place, with 80 points, Mr. Victor Crumb of Durmstrang Institute. More applause. And in third place, Miss Flore Delacour of Beaubaton Academy. Harry could just make out Mrs. Weasley, Bill, Ron, and Hermione applauding. Flora politely halfway up the stands. He waved at them, and they waved back, beaming at him. "So, on my whistle, Harry and Cedric," said Bagman. "Three, two, one." He gave a short blast of the whistle, and Harry and Cedric hurried forward into the maze. The towering hedges cast black shadows across the path, and whether because they were so tall and thick, or because they had been enchanted, the sound of the surrounding crowd was silenced almost the moment they entered the maze. Harry felt almost as though he were underwater again. He pulled out his wand, muttered "Lumos," and heard Cedric do the same just behind him. After about 50 yards, they reached a fork. They looked at each other. "See you," said Harry, and he took the left one, while Cedric took the right. Harry heard Bagman's whistle for the second time. Crumb had entered the maze. Harry sped up. His chosen path seemed completely deserted. He turned right and hurried on, holding his wand high over his head, trying to see as far as he could, as far as possible. Still, there was nothing in sight. Bagman's whistle blew in the distance for the third time. All the champions were now inside. Harry kept looking behind him. The old feeling that he was being watched was upon him. The maze was growing darker with every passing minute as the sky overhead deepened to navies. He reached a second fork. "Point me," he whispered to his wand, holding it flat in his palm. The wand spun around once, pointed toward his right into solid hedge. That way was north, and he knew that he needed to go northwest for the center of the maze. The best he could do was take the left fork and go right again as soon as possible. The path up ahead was empty too, and when Harry reached a right turn and took it, he again found his way unblocked. Harry didn't know why, but the lack of obstacles was unnerving to him. Surely he should have met something by now. It felt as though the maze were luring him into a false sense of security. Then he heard movement behind him. He held out his wand, ready to attack. But its beam fell only on Cedric, who had just hurried out of a path on the right-hand side. Cedric looked severely shaken. The sleeve of his robe was smoking. "Hagrid's blast-ended scroots," he hissed. "They're enormous. I only just got away." He shook his head and dived out of sight along another path, keen to put plenty of distance between himself and the scroots. Harry hurried off again. Then, as he turned a corner, he saw a Dementor gliding toward him. 12 feet tall, its face hidden by its hood, its rotting, scabbed hands outstretched, it advanced, sensing its way blindly toward him. Harry could hear its rattling breath. He felt clammy coldness stealing over him. But he knew what he had to do. He summoned the happiest thought he could, concentrated with all his might on the thought of getting out of the maze and celebrating with Ron and Hermione, raised his wand and cried, "Expecto Patronum!" A silver stag erupted from the end of Harry's wand and galloped toward the Dementor, which fell back and tripped over the hem of its robes. Harry had never seen a Dementor stumble. "Hang on," he shouted, advancing in the wake of his silver Patronus. "You're a boggart! Ridiculous!" There was a loud crack, and the shapeshifter exploded in a wisp of smoke. The silver stag faded from sight. Harry wished it could have stayed. He could have used some company. But he moved on quickly and quietly as possible, listening hard with his wand held high once more. All right. I'm going to end it there because I'm stumbling over my words and I'm ready to go to sleep. I love you. Goodbye. Talk to you tomorrow.